All right. We are holding on Mempeum a Days at the bottom by the Mishnah. Continuing on the topic of how the Nazir finishes off his Nazirus, the previous two Mishnayos described how he brings his Karbonus, shaves his hair, throws it under the fire, and now we're up to the next part. Mishnah says, Hayimavashal Sashlamim, a Shokan, the Nazir would cook the Shlamim, or Shokan. What does Shokan mean? Rashi says it means undercooking. Tosafot says it means overcooking. Either way, it's not a normal kind of cooking. But the point is, when the Torah uses the expression that the Kohen is supposed to take, it says, Zroya b'shelam in ha'ayil, he's supposed to take the cooked front leg of the ram that was brought as the shlamim, and then that, together with a couple of the other parts, is waved as the mission will continue, and then they go to the Kohen. So it has to be cooked, because you're going to be eating it. So either cooking or shlika, whether that means under or overcooking, is fine. I saw, by the way, a couple of interesting ideas that the Mefarshim give for the significance of this. Usually, the parts that you give to the Kohen, the parts that you wave and then you give to the Kohen, usually you give them to him raw. You don't usually cook them first before you give them to him. First of all, why b'chlal is the leg included over here, and second of all, why, and second of all, why is it cooked first? So a couple of different ideas various Mefarshim give. One is the leg, the front leg, which corresponds to the arm in a human being, represents strength. So it represents the idea, the person saying, till now I've been a nazir, I've kind of been separating myself from regular society, now I'm returning with my full strength, but I'm not just going to take that strength and use it for my own purposes, I'm giving that away to the Kohen. I don't think I mentioned that, but no, that was the hair, that was why you put the hair under the fire. This is talking about why you take the leg from the shlamim and then wave that and give it to the Kohen. There's also an interesting idea that Hamak Dover says that when you get down to it, if you're cooking the whole shlomim together, and then you're taking the leg and giving and waving it and giving it to the Kohen, inevitably the rest of the shlomim has absorbed some taste from that leg and vice versa. As a matter of fact, the Gemara in Cholin explains the way we get the concept of bitzel b'shishim is because the leg, the front leg, is about 1/60th the size of the whole animal. So therefore, it represents the idea, even though now the Nazir is not a Kohen, after all, therefore he's not the one who eats it, it's given to the Kohen, but in a way he's like a Kohen. He's reached the greatness of a Kohen, so to speak, and therefore he may not be able to eat the actual leg, but at least he can eat something that has the flavor of the leg in it. And similarly, he says, for the same reason, the Mishnah continues with the various types of bread that the Nazir would bring. There's 20 loaves of bread that he'd bring along with his korban, of which one of each kind is waved and given to the Kohen. Same idea. In other words, when you have a lot of bread in a basket, crumbs break off and then mix with each other. Similar idea. Like, he's not able to eat the actual part that goes to the Kohen, but like, he can have sort of the flavor of it.
Okay. According to your opinion, like a fire can mean overcooking.
Right.
It's still to be edible.
Yeah. For the same token, according to Rashi, if shokan means undercooking,
right,
the pashtus, it has to be cooked enough to eat. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Mishnah continues. Kohen notes zroya b'shelam in ha'ayil. The Kohen then takes the cooked front right leg from the ram. The chalas matzah achas min asal, and one chalas matzah from the bread. There's two types of loaves of bread that the Kohen brings. One is chalos matzah, thick loaves, and the other one is rokik matzah echad, and one thin matzah. You have 10 of each. The notes in akapi anozer, he puts all of that on the hands of the nozer, umanifan, and they wave it in all directions. After that, the nozer becomes mutter to drink wine and to become tummy mess. Now, when we say achakach, does that mean after all of this was done in the Mishnah? After all of this procedure done in the Mishnah is described? Maybe not. Let's finish the Mishnah, and then we'll see. Reb Shimon Omer, kivin shenizrak olav echad min adamim, as soon as the blood of one of the three korbanos has been sprinkled on his behalf, hotar anozer lishtis b'yayin olav tamim l'meisim, he's already able to drink wine and become tamim mes. So Tosfos says that actually the first part of our Mishnah must be, the Gemara is going to say that we have the other opinion other than Reb Shimon is Reb Eliezer, who says that he needs everything to be done before he's finished being a Nazir. So therefore, the first part of the Mishnah, the Tanakhama, would be Reb Eliezer, and then you'd have Reb Shimon. On the other hand, the Rambam paskins that one of them is good enough, Acha Maisi Yechidi, like Reb Shimon, but yet he brings the Lashon HaMishnah as we have it. Acha Kach, Hutar Anozer, Lishtis Yayin. Some of Farshim on the Rambam talk about the idea that the Rambam may hold that, yes, b'dieved, if he did it after just one of the bloods was sprinkled, then fine. Like Rav Chaim says, you're not going to give him malchus for being over on his nezirus at that point. But l'chatchila, he should be waiting until everything is done. In which case, according to the Rambam, it would mean you don't have a Tanakam versus Rav Chaim, and you have l'chatchila versus b'dieved, basically. The Gemara says, we learn in a braisa, when the pasuk says, v'achal yishta ha-nozir yayin, after that, it's describing how you wave the pieces of the shlomim and the bread, after that it says the nozir can drink wine, which means achar ha-maisim kulam, means after everything has been done. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. That's what Rabbi Eliezer says, and again, according to Tosfos, the Tana Kama of our Mishnah then is Rabbi Eliezer. Whereas the Chachamim say it's good enough if you do it after one single thing was accomplished. Like Rav Shimon says, that the Chachamim of this Braisa are Rav Shimon in the Mishnah. That once you did one thing, once you brought one of the Korbanos, then you're good. Okay. My time is the Rabbanon. So what's the Rabbanon's logic? Rabbi Eliezer, we understand. The Pasuk only says, V'achar Yishan Nozer Yain, after it describes the whole ritual. What about the Chachamim or Rav Shimon? Where are they getting it from? The answer is Ksiv Hacha, V'achar Yishan Nozer Yain, because here it says that after that the Nozer can drink wine. Uchtiv Ofen Achar Iskalcha Is Nizrei. And then there's a different Pasuk, a couple of psukim earlier that describe the tenufa, the waving of the pieces of the shlomim and the bread is done achar iskalcha is nizrei, after he shaved his hair. Which mahal samacha maisi yichidi. So just like over there, you're talking after only one thing has happened, because the pasuk is achar iskalcha is nizrei implies that he all he's done so far is the shaving. The same thing over here. When we say v'achal yishta, so the same way as there, the tznufa is done after one thing has been accomplished, he shaved his hair. The same thing over here, the achal yishta nozer yain means after he accomplished one thing, after the blood of one of the korbanos has been sprinkled. Okay, the grass, ema adi ikatabayu. Why? Say that maybe it means until both things have been accomplished. Because what you have is, in each case, you're doing after everything that should have been done up until that point is done. The Tigrachas takes place after everything that should have been accomplished up until that point is done. Maybe over here also. It means after the korbanos are brought and after the haircut is done. The answer is, well, then what would we need the Gzeder Shava for? Then that would just be the Pashtus Apostle. So Rabbi Eliezer Meila, we've talked a few times before about the idea that the various Acharonim talk about, I believe the Chavos Yoyer and others talk about this, that each one of the Chachamim had the Kabbalah from their teachers, a certain number of Gzeder Shavas that there are in the Torah, and the pairs of words that make up each Gzeder Shava. Within that, they could understand from on their own what that Zera Shava is meant to teach us. Evidently, Rabbi Eliezer did not have this Zera Shava Acha in his Kabbalah, whereas the Chachamim did. So if they have this Zera Shava in their Kabbalah, they have to use it for something. If the Pasuk meant that Acha, that only after everything's been accomplished, is he able to drink wine, then you don't need a Zera Shava for that. You just have the simple meaning of Sukkim.
So you're saying only the ones who receive the Kabbalah have the need to use it?
Yes, that's what we're saying. So the Rosh asks the question, why? Maybe say that it also includes the tznufa, the waving of the korban. Maybe at least according to the Chacham, that has to be done before he can drink wine. And the answer is the Gemara is going to say later on that, and the Gemara also mentions this concept in Zvachim. That the waving of a korban b'chlal, the several korbanos that have to be waved, and any time a person brings the shlomim, the chazah and shoykh are waved. Here you have the leg and the loaves of the bread. By a toida, certain parts are waved, etc. All those things. The idea is it's all considered shiore mitzvah. It's like the leftovers of the mitzvah. If you didn't do it, the korban is still kosher. The Gemara's expression for it is that if you make it shiori mitzvah, if you leave it over, mala olav kielu like keeper, then the pasuk considers it as if you didn't accomplish the full kapara. You did. As a matter of fact, you did. All you need for the kapara is that the blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach, and later on the fats are offered on the mizbeach. Everything else is kind of needed but not essential. But still, the pasuk implies needed for the kapara. In other words, the full kapara, let's say when a person brings the chachas, for example, here, where a person brings the korbanos of another, the full-fledged kapara, the full-fledged thing is accomplished by all the things being accomplished, the blood being sprinkled on the mizbeach, the fat being burnt, the waving being done, and the kohenim eating the parts that they're supposed to eat. Tovim Nemorim from the Bible of Skakrim.
Your Yotze is a korban if you don't...
Your Yotze if only the blood was sprinkled.
But you don't reach the amount of kafara that you would...
Essentially, that's the idea. It's a ma'al olav akos of tila lekip. Yeah. So the pasuk considers it, you didn't do mitzvah namuvcha. You didn't do the mitzvah the proper way. So therefore, in other words, going back to here, the Chachamim can't possibly say that the Gzera Shava Achar teaches us that you have to wait till after the Tanufa, because the Tanufa itself is not really so essential to the process anyhow. So therefore, necessarily, it has to mean, like they said, Achar Maisi Yechidi, after only one thing has been accomplished. Okay. Further on this topic, Omar Rav, Tanufa ben Nozir Ma'akevet. So Rav says that the Nozir is waving the carbon is Ma'akev, it is essential to the process.
That's a lot of probably.
Well, relax, we'll see. The question is, Alibu Deman, according to whom is Rav saying this? Could you say that maybe he's saying according to the Rabbanon of the Braisa, which is Rav Shimon of our Mishnah? Listen, how could that be? Tiglachas amir Rabbanon lay ma'akva. Did the Chachamim even say that shaving the hair is not ma'akva? Even if the Nazir didn't shave, if all he did was ma'isa echad, all he did was the blood of one carbon was sprinkled, and already he's allowed to drink wine. Tanufa mevoya, much more so the Tanufa, which is more of a shira mitzvah, can't be ma'akva. Ela libidir of Eliezer, so you're going to say... We're talking about the Eved, but fine. But when he says ma'akiv, means that if you did not do the tenufa, the job has not been finished. The nazir is still a nazir. But how could that be? The Chachamim say you don't even need the chiklachas, which is a more essential thing than the tenufa. Ela libidir of Eliezer, so you're going to say that Rav is saying according to Rav Eliezer. Well, pshita homer Rav Eliezer, achamais and kulam. Of course, Rav Eliezer said that the Nazir can only start drinking wine and becoming tumel a mess after everything has been accomplished. So yes, Tanufa is one of the things that has to be accomplished.
You don't need
your Rav to tell us that. The answer is it is according to Rav Eliezer. Mao de Tema, because you might have thought, like we just said, given to the Indian Kapara Shiore Mitzvah, since when it comes to the Kapara, the Tanufa is considered Shiore Mitzvah, it's considered like the leftovers of the Mitzvah. It's something that should be done for Mitzvah and Amokher, but it's not essential. Shiore, in the sense like we say every morning in Ezra Mokhem, Shire Adama Yeshev Chayesai Ma'arabi. The remainder of the blood is poured onto the Yesod of the Zeach. Again, they're also, that's not essential. We learned way back in Yuma in connection with Korbanos of Yom Kippur that all that's essential is that the blood is sprinkled in the respective places, the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Mizveach HaZav and all. After that, if the rest of the blood spills and you never end up pouring the rest of it on the Yesod, fine, the korbanos have still been accomplished.
So Rabbi Eliezer seems to agree with the Chachamim here?
No. We're saying like this. We're saying that Rav is saying, you would think, since so far as kapara is concerned, when it comes to bringing a korban, the kapara is accomplished even without the shirayim, even without this residual thing of ketanufa. So it should be done as mitzvah namukha, but it doesn't have to. You would think, hachanami loy ta'akiv, then here also you would think, maybe it's not ma'akiv. So maybe if the waving was not done, the nazir can still go ahead and drink wine, etc. Kamash Malon, that's what Rav is telling us, that according, so far, that's what we have. According to Rav Eliezer, Rav is saying, nevertheless, when Rav Eliezer says that you need everything, he means literally everything, even the kind of things, like the tenufa, which are not usually essential to the process.
And essential, because it's not good if you don't have...
That's what he's saying. Ma'akav means that it's essential. Okay, the question is, mi ma'akva? How can you tell me that the tenufa? How can you tell me the tenufa is ma'akiv? That the waving is ma'akiv? Well, Tanya, we learn in a braita. The pasuk says zoyf terdas ha-nazir. This is the rule of the nazir, which implies the same rule applies to all kinds of nazirim. Ben sheyesh le-kapayim, ben she'en le-kapayim. It means whether he has hands or he doesn't have hands. If his hands have been amputated, for example, he still l'chura. It sounds that he still does tenufa. So far it sounds like it means maybe he doesn't have to. If he doesn't, no, not the kohen. The kohen, if the kohen doesn't have hands, he's a baal mum. We're talking about the nazir. If the nazir doesn't have hands, it sounds like so far the braisa is saying that it's okay. The tenufa doesn't have to be done. So if the tenufa doesn't have to be done, and presumably Rabbi Eliezer is not arguing with that, then that would be a skitter, yeah. Okay, the Gemara asks back, the Elohad the Tanya, fine. What about if you're gonna understand the Braisa that way, that if he has no hands and the Tanufa doesn't need to be done, then how are you going to understand the following brayso, which uses the same words for different limud? Zos teres hanozer means ben sheyesh lo seir, ben sheein lo seir, whether he has hair or whether he does not have hair, so whether the shaving is able to be done or not. When we say he doesn't have hair, by the way, we're not talking about the case we had earlier in the perek where robbers shaved him or he shaved himself or whatever illegally. We're talking about he's bald. So you're going to argue hachanami to lema akva. You're going to argue by the same logic that the braisa means to tell you that the shaving is not ma'akev, but even though he can't do the shaving because he's bald, nevertheless, that's okay. He can still continue with the process, and he still finishes his nazirus. But I'll tell you what we learned in the braisa: nazir memorot, a nazir who is bald. The shamai says he does not have to pass a razor over his head. And the Sibyl says that he does. And furthermore, what does that mean? Ravina, when we say he needs to, he doesn't need to, what does that mean? What does Bishamai mean when they say he doesn't need? They don't mean he doesn't need as in you can skip the whole thing and nothing happens. On the contrary, it means means he doesn't need to because it's not going to help him anyway. Even if a nazir, a bald nazir, according to Bishamai, if he were to take a razor and run it over his head without cutting any hair, because there's no hair to cut, nothing happens. He hasn't accomplished anything. So therefore, he may as well not bother. Which means, actually, and ein lo takana, there's no way of fixing him up. Since he's not able to do the mitzvah of giluach, then therefore he can never end his nazirus. Hala b'silu yesh lo takana. Which would imply that according to Basilo, there is a takana. If Bishamai is saying that ain't tzarech means ain't a takana, that there's no way for him to accomplish what he needs to accomplish, if Basilo is arguing, then it means Basilo has to hold yesh le takana. But obviously, there is some way of him fixing up the situation. What would the takana be? That the takana would be that he would pass a razor over his head. There's no shaving involved, fine, but at least he's accomplished the mitzvah that we said earlier in the parak, Karla Yava Arosha, Meloy Sayyamim, but at least, so like this, he's passing a razor over his head. Symbolically, kind of, yeah. To satisfy the pasuk, right. So where does that leave us, in other words? The point is, V'hainu d'Rav Pados, this fits with what Rav Pados says. D'Amar Rav Pados, Bishamai, Rav Eliezer, Amar Dover Asher. Rav Pados says that Bishamai and Rav Eliezer ended up saying the same thing. Well, so far, before we get into that, let's review where we are so far. We thought that Zois Tertus Amnazir, the first braisa about the no hand, means if he doesn't have hands, fine. No, takes place. Now we're saying, though, that according to Bishamai, at least, that according to Bishamai, if he doesn't have any hair, nothing doing. He can't finish off his nazirus. He's stuck.
But the hands, what did we want
to... Well, that's what we're trying to figure out. We're learning them from the same pasuk. So if by the hair, Bishamai is saying it means, since he has no hair to shave, then nothing doing. He can't fulfill the mitzvah, therefore he can never end his nazirus. Then according to Bishamai, you should say the same logic when it comes to the hands. That if he doesn't, because it's the same pasuk, we're learning it in the same two brackets that are learning it in the same way. If he doesn't have hands, if he doesn't have kapayim, if he doesn't have hands to place the bread and the zeroy on, then nothing doing. He can't finish his nazir.
And therefore, without hair, you cannot do it. But
there's no reason to think that. If we're learning them both from Zois Tertus Amnazir, and we see that Bishamai explicitly says something in the case of hair, then we should assume they would say, and in fact, the Gemara is going to continue, saying that Bishamai and Rabbi Eliezer evidently hold the same way as far as this goes. I mean, in general, we find in a number of places in Shas, Rabbi Eliezer Shamuti, Rabbi Eliezer was Shamuti, and one of the explanations, Tosfos says that one explanation of Shamuti Rashi mentions in a few places is that he was placed in Shamta, in Nidri, the famous story in Bava Metzia with Tanur Shalachnoi. But the other explanation that Tosfos brings in Nidda is that he was one of the Talmudim of Bishamai. So therefore, it's natural that he follows Bishamai in a lot of places. And here we have Rav Pados is going to say so, that in this case, explicitly.
Maybe Bishamai believes that someone else can do this mitzvah, not necessarily
Nazir. It says Al-Kape Han-Nazir. It says on the hands of the Nazir. So if the Nazir has no hands, then... So Rav is telling us that according to... So let's go back a little bit. Rav said, what? Fine, but we're talking according to Rabbi Eliezer.
Not on the
Holy Code,
but Manozi can do it, right?
No, because according to Bitzilul, you could say the same thing also. So far we have according to Bitzilul, you could say that he passes the razor over his head without cutting anything. In the case of the Tnufa, fine, he'll hold it on his arms.
Yeah.
He doesn't have arms. Okay, then.
No cupping.
Fine, but the same way as they were saying that the Tarul Yava Rosh had to cut his hair, but he doesn't have any hair, so.
Really, the razor comes on his hair, even though there's
right,
no hair.
Right.
Okay, but it all depends. Yes, but the Pasuk also uses the expression Acha is Galcha. The Pasuk says that he actually shaves. But Tibul evidently is saying that it's fine as long as you sort of symbolically, as long as you fulfilled one aspect of it, then it's good enough. So fine, but so far we're dealing according to Miss Chamai and according to Rabbi Eliezer. Because, again, Ravitz said his original thing that the snooker is not active. And we established so far that has to be according to Rabbi Eliezer because the Chachamim, there's no reason they should say the snooker is not active. They hold hardly anything that's not active except for one of the Karbanos.
According to
it has to be according to Rabbi Eliezer. But from the first Braisa about the hand, it sounds like it's not active. So that's what the Gemara is saying back. We could, after all, prove Rav's point from the case of the hair. If you find that the Shammai holds that if he has no hair, then that's it, he's stuck, because
right.
The hair, the shaving, is essential to the process,
yeah.
Which is according to, which matches what Rabbi Eliezer said before, and as the Gemara is going to point out, it also matches something Rabbi Eliezer said someplace else, and by the same thing with the tenufa and the hand, yeah. That's, and therefore, that proves Rav's original point that according to Rabbi Eliezer, the lack of tenufa is massive. Right. That's a Kohen, though. We're talking the Nazir himself. You're right. I mean, a Kohen himself is bald as well.
I'm saying the Kohen himself can't perform the duty.
Right.
You don't make up that, he can use the other hand.
No, but that's different. The Torah spells out. The Torah explicitly spells out by a Kohen, Kol Asher Bo Mum Lo Yikrav. So there's no two ways about it. If he has a Mum, he's not coming to do the Avodah. By the Nazir, the Torah never says that he's not allowed to have a Mum. Okay, so this fits with what Rav Pedos says, the Amr of Pedos. This that we said, that according to Beit Shammai, that Ravina had explained Beit Shammai to be saying, Ein Tzarech Ve'Ein Lo Takana, that he doesn't need to pass a razor over his head because it's not going to do him any good anyway, he's stuck. That fits with what Rav Pedos said, the Amr of Pedos, in a different context. Beit Shammai, Rav Eliezer, Amr of Dabar Achad, Beit Shammai and Rav Eliezer are both saying the same thing. They're both essentially expressing the same din in different cases. My Rabbi Eliezer, where do we see that Rabbi Eliezer said such a thing? Besides, not really in our case, because in our case, yes, we said that according to Rabbi Eliezer, everything is necessary for the Nazir's purposes, but that's where you can do everything. We haven't found yet explicitly that Rabbi Eliezer would say if there's one of them that you're not able to accomplish, that it's ma'akiv, but we see that from something else Rabbi Eliezer said. In the case of a Mitzvah, what happens by a Mitzvah? A Mitzvah brings Korbanos, and then the Pasuk describes part of the process of those korbanos is that the kohen takes some of the blood of the asham and puts it on his right ear, his right thumb, and his right toe, and then he takes some of the oil. The mitzvah also brings a lug of oil together with the korbanos, and the kohen does the same thing. He pours out some of the oil on his hand and he dips his finger into it and again puts it in the same places, ear, thumb, and toe. So what if he doesn't have an ear? He doesn't have a thumb, etc. Yeah. So that's what the Mishnah said. The Tanya, here it says the Tanya. We learn a Brayta on the side. It says really should be the Tanan. And here it says the Mishnah. It's actually a Mishnah in the Sefer Negoim. Ein lo boyan yad v'rego. What if the Mitzvah does not have a thumb or a big toe? Ein lo tarei lomis. Then there's no way for him to ever become toe. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Yes, that's what Rabbi Eliezer is saying. The Pasuk says boyan yonis. On the other hand, boyan yad means the thumb. Boyan rego means the big toe.
What's the name come from?
Oh, yeah, no, that's the word for it. You know, where did any word come from? I don't know. I guess when other magician named all the animals, he also named the body parts.
Bohen means
what?
Bohen means what?
Bohen means the big finger, basically. So on the hand, it means the thumb, and on the toe, and on the foot, it means the big toe, yeah. In Yeshua, there's a landmark mentioned in the borders of Yehuda and Binyamin. There's a landmark they mention, Evan Bohan Ben Ruven. Now, there's a few different explanations that the Farshim have, but one of them is it was a thumb-shaped rock. It was a big thumb, big rock that stuck out like a sore thumb, and so they use it as a landmark. So that's the Rebbe Eliezer. Rebbe Shimon Omer, no, no problem. No, just put it where somewhere the Torah is supposed to be. I'm on the stump.
What is exactly the
sum? The sum is this. Exactly.
How many birds?
I don't know. Probably both of them. I don't know. But whatever. If he has his whole.
If you have a sum, is it considered?
That's the thing. If you have one part of it, maybe that's still considered. But if you have the whole thing, okay, whatever. Yeah. Fine. So Rav Shimon.
I know a young boy is now 5 years old.
Wow. But that's different, though. He has all the flanges.
But it's kind of like very, very sharp.
But that's different. He has all the bones. He has all the sections of it. All the flanges, two in the thumb, three in the other finger. They're just tiny. We're talking about a kohen, a metzora, who's actually missing one, or maybe both, or maybe only one of them, whatever. So Rabbi Eliezer says, "Ein leitara elamis." Rabbi Shimon says, "Yanichenu amakoyma." You can just put the blood and the oil on the stump where the thumb or the toe or the earlobe was. The yotzer, and that's good enough. He's yotzer.
I must tell you the story. My mother had a problem with her toes. Between the thumb, the toe, and the ear, this one would stick up.
Okay.
And thing it was that it wouldn't go down, and it was causing a problem where it was rubbing on the shoe, etc., etc. So the doctor had to do an operation. And so the thing is that he said, look, I can do either of two ways. I can either take or amputate the toe completely, or
was it big toe?
Fix the whole thing. No, it wasn't the big toe,
yeah.
The second one.
And they say that you can lose any other toe without it affecting your walk so much. It's only the big toe, really.
The thing is, you know, my mother thought, you know, well, look, you know, if you can do it, so that, you know, why not? You're born with five, keep five.
Right.
But, you know, and she did it, and it worked out all right in the end. But the thing is, you know, he was quite happy to do away with it.
As I understand it, you can lose any toe, and it doesn't affect your walk so much as your big toe that really makes the difference because you balance on it. Actually, that's one of the symbolic ideas, one of the Foshim, probably Rishon should follow her, she's big on these kinds of symbolic things, explains why Taka the Koyan puts the blood and the oil on the ear, the thumb, and the toe. One idea is the thumb is like the strength of your hand. Your opposable thumbs is what makes us human, is one of the things that makes us human after all. And the toe, the big toe, you rely on your walk. So it shows like we're going to put all our efforts of our hands and all the walk of our feet into now being, not being what a Masoda was, basically. But the ear is the ear heard, but I don't remember exactly. I mean, the ear heard by Matt and Toto, we know that's why the slaves got the pierced, but I don't remember exactly the significance of the ear in that connection. Okay. Anyway, yeah. Okay. And the chum say, okay, you don't have a right thumb, put it on the left thumb, etc. The point is that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that if you don't have a right thumb or a right toe, that's it, you're stuck. So therefore, that's the same thing as the Shammai is saying, according to Ravina's understanding, that if a nazir doesn't have hair, you can't say pass a razor over his head or any such thing. That's it, he's stuck. That's what mean Rabbi Shimon, the Shammai and Rabbi Eliezer are saying the same thing.
Rabbi Eliezer is repeating the opinion of the Shammai.
Not repeating, he's saying in a different context. He's saying in a different context.
For the Metzora, whereas
we're talking over here about the Nazir.
Right.
Now, what's interesting is, before we continue the Gemara, what's interesting is the Rambam paskins, the Rambam seems to be, on the face of it, a little inconsistent over here. In the case of the hands, he says it doesn't matter whether the nazir has hands or not. He does it on his arms or whatever. On the other hand, in the case of we're talking about the nazir waving it with his hand.
Oh.
On the other hand, when it comes to the bald nazir, the Rambam says that he does not have to pass a razor over his head. And he can still be Yotze, which doesn't sound like either Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel so far. Beis Shammai said he doesn't need to because it's not going to do him any good anyway. He's stuck. And Beis Hillel is saying he has to, and he'll be Yotze that way. And when it comes to the Masoda, but I'm on Paskins like Rabbi Eliezer, that if he doesn't have a thumb, right thumb or a right toe or a right earlobe, then he's stuck. So what is it? Why by the nose if he's not stuck? Why by the Masoda he is? How is he passing over here in that case? So the hair seems to be neither like Beis Shammai nor Beis Hillel. So the Mefarshim have a bit of a time with it.
What?
So the Ravid actually does not take issue, at least not in the case of the Nazir. But there's a few.
Why?
Okay, well, I don't know why. But there's a few possibilities. First of all, on the side here, and in Masoret HaShas, it points out, it references a Tosfos in Menachos, that says there's a number of places in Shas where we find that different sugyas have opposite versions of how the Chachamim held in various cases. This is one of them, because, for example, in the case of the Masoret with the missing thumb or toe, here we have it's Rabbi Eliezer is the one who's machmir and says that he's stuck. Over there in the Mishnah and Negayim, it's the Chachamim are the ones who are saying he's stuck. Just the opposite. Similarly with the lack of hair. Over here we're saying that the Shammai is saying that a nazir with no hair ain't a tzarech ve'ain a takana, he's stuck, and the Tzillah are the ones who say he's okay. Whereas in the Gemara and Yomar that also brings this and says that it's the other way, that it has it the other way around. The Sibyl is the one who's saying Enik Tzarech, and the Shammai are the ones who are saying Tzarech, which the Gemara also uses over there the expression Tzarech Ve'ema Chakana. He needs to shave, but he can't because there's no hair to shave. So one possibility, therefore, that some of the Mefarshim on Rambam discussed that maybe the Rambam is basing himself on that then, since we have the opposite versions of them in Yomar and in Negayim respectively, the Rambam might be following those rather than our Gemara over here. The Radvaz wants to say in the case of the Nazir without the hair, maybe the correct girsa in the Rambam should actually be tzorich lahavir kar, that he does need to pass the razor over his head, which will match what the Vesil is saying over here. Other Mefarshim talk about the possibility that maybe we can distinguish between the Nazir that has a mitzvah to shave his hair, but there's also a mitzvah to pass a razor over his head. Usually those two things go together. In the case of a bald Nazir, not. So the Rambam may be saying, look, since you can't do krok hadichtiv anyway, you can't accomplish what the pasuk is saying about shaving because there's no hair to shave. Therefore, he would understand this symbol to be saying that you don't need to. He'd be understanding that you don't need to pass a razor over your head b'chlal because in any case there's no hair to shave. And since the chachamim are saying, going back to our mishnah, since the chachamim are saying that all you need is the blood of one of the korbanos being sprinkled in order to now be able to drink wine and be matan l'meisim, then therefore, okay, the shaving is not so essential anyway, and therefore if he's bald, then fine, you just skip the shaving and have done with it. As far as the business with the hands, with the hands of the Nazir versus the thumb and toe of the Mitzvah, the Lechem Mishnah, I think it was Magid Mishnah, one of the Mefarshim on that, I think it's the Lechem Mishnah, the Rambam talks about the possibility by the Nazir we had before the Gzeira Shava Achar, the Gzeira Shava that the Chachamim brought, to say that only one thing is necessary, and it's not Tzurfa. It's only the bringing of one of the bloods. Therefore, the Rambam can say, fine, he doesn't have any hands, okay. So the korban won't be waved on his hands, big deal. By the Mitzvah, we have no such Zera Shava. Therefore, we have to be Krokodil. We have to do the pasuk as it's written. The pasuk says you need a thumb and a toe to put the blood on. No thumb, no toe, then nothing doing. So those are some of the possibilities that they discuss as far as how to reconcile the Rambam. All the different Mefarshim on the Rambam discuss it. Another interesting thing, by the way, just to mention, is Rambam also said that if the Nazir did not, the Rambam mentions also in connection with this, that if the Nazir didn't shave, then at the end of that day, he can drink wine being a Tamil Mason. So why at the end of that day? So I think it's the Ur Sameach says, the reason is because as long as it's still that day, he could still accomplish what he did. He could still do the shaving later in the day and put it under the fire of the korban or whatever and be yotze that way. Once the day is over, that's it. He's lost the opportunity to do the shaving anyway. He's anyway not going to be able to mekayim the mitzvah. So therefore, there's no reason to, since the chachamim say it's not ma'akiv anyway. Then at that point, so he has to wait till the evening just in case he may get around to doing the shaving. But once he missed it, he missed it. So if he shaves, that's what we're saying. If he shaves the next day, he hasn't accomplished the mitzvah. Not accomplished. No. He's finished his nezirus. He finished his nezirus. He brought his korbanos. He just didn't get around to shaving in connection with any of the korbanos. Fine. Okay. He didn't shave. He wasn't mekayim that mitzvah of shaving. But still, he brought his korbanos. No. That would only be if he shaved his hair before any of the korbanos were brought, which actually is the subject of the next mishnah. So let's see. Okay. That's all one lashon. Lishnachrina, another version of this whole discussion. Lishnachrina Amrila, they say another version of this whole discussion. It starts out, Omer Rav, Tznufa b'nozim akeves. Again, that Rav had said that the Tznufa, that the waving of the pieces of the korban is ma'akev when it comes to a nazir. So if he doesn't do it, then he can't drink wine, etc. And again, the question is, Alibu Deman, who would that be according to? So now the discussion goes the other way around. Elema Alibu Deman, are you going to say that is according to Alibu Deman? Shifta. Well, of course, Rabbi Eliezer would say that. Homer Rabbi Eliezer, Achamais and Kulam. Rabbi Eliezer said, after everything is accomplished, and the Tanukha is one of the things. Here, the Gemara is not using the argument that it did before, that maybe we would say Tanukha is usually not ma'akib, so maybe it wouldn't be ma'akib. Here, no, Rabbi Eliezer says everything fine. It means everything. Ela alibidu Rabbanan. So are you saying that Rav is saying his statement according to the Rabbanan? How could that be? Hashti yeshlema tiglachas amir Rabbanan lema'akba. Look, the Rabbanan have said that even the shaving is not ma'akib tenufa mibaya, how much more so the tenufa. So let's ask back, or mi loy ma'akba. Now let's ask the other way around. Again, the opposite of the previous discussion. Should we say, are you telling me that according to the Chachamim, the shaving is not ma'akib? I can prove you from a braisa that it is, even according to the Chachamim.
Because
this is a different version. No, it's a different version of the discussion. I think Gemara does that a lot of times. There was one version of the discussion maybe that took place in one of the yeshivas,
right,
and a different version the other way with opposite assumptions kind of that took place in another.
It's not a deduction from the previous.
No. So umiloy ma'akba, how could we say that the lack of shaving is not ma'akba according to the Chachamim? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, zois teretz ha-nazir, which implies that the same rules apply to all the nazir, to every kind of nazir, ven sheyesh le-kapayim, ven she'en le-kapayim, whether he has hands or not. And we continue, v'elaha v'tanya, what about this that we learn in a braisa, zois teretz ha-nazir, which means ven sheyesh le-seir, ven she'en le-seir, whether he has hair or not, hachin nami de ma'akba. So you're telling me then that, according to that, it sounds like the shaving of the hair is ma'akiv? Because, again, you're going to assume that the two braises mean the same thing. So if you're going to assume that the one braise is saying that the shaving of the hair is ma'akiv, then it would have to mean the other one would have to be that the tenufa is ma'akiv. But how could that be? Well, Tanya, but we've learned in another braise, Nozim Moira, the bold Nozim, but Shammai Me'enitzar Fahavatar Arosha, but Shammai says he does not have to pass a razor over his head, or Vasil Amim Tzarech, and Vasil says he does. And now, so here we have two different Gersois in the Gemara, what the next piece means. Here we have the word Omar, Rabbi Vina, which that would be an answer. You can't directly compare the two things. The Gemara is, according to the Gersa that we have in front of us, what the Gemara is assuming is that when Basilo says Tzarich, means like we said before, he has to take a razor and run it over his head, even though he's not going to be shaving any hair with that, but at least he's accomplished that. And then the Gemara would answer that, no, that's not what Basilo means. That's the Gersa that we have. The Rosh brings the Gersa, V'Omar Rabbi Avina. That it's a continuation, that when we say, when Basilo says Tzorich, we understand that to mean what Rav Avina says. Before, by the way, we had Ravina, here it's Rav Avina, it's actually the same name. The Shura Goyim writes, it's the same, Ravina and Rav Avina are the same person. Rav Shura Goyim wrote a very famous letter that many people may have heard of that outlines Jewish history basically from the times of the end of the Mishnah until his own times, the period of the Amoraim and Rabbanan Tzvaroi and Zaonim, and he explains over there how the Mishnah came to be composed, etc. It's a very famous, the Igeres of Rav Shura Goyim. Then he wrote a second letter to the same person, Rav Nissim Goyim in Kairouan in North Africa. Rav Nissim had asked him, how come we have such a wide variation in the names of the Tanoim and Amoraim? Some of them have no title at all, like Hillel, for example. Some of them are Rav something. Some of them are Rebbe something. You have some Amoraim like Ravina and Rafram or whatever, who appear without a title. What's going on? So this is, it's from that letter that we get the famous expression, Godol Merab and Shmoy, there's a hierarchy, Rav is the lowest, Rebbe is higher than that, it means he got Smicha, Rabban is even greater than that, it's reserved for the Nesim, and Godol Merab and Shmoy, even greater than Rabban, is just when a person is called by his personal name without a title, like Hillel. And then in that letter, Rav Shura explains that as far as there's a bunch of names of Amoraim that begin with a Reish, where it's actually it's a combination of Reb or Rav and their name. Rabba, for example, is really Reb Abba. Rabba also is Reb Abba. Ravina is Reb Avina. Rafram is Reb Ephraim, and so forth. So before, so earlier on the Amud, we had Ravina. Here we have Reb Avina. It's the same person. Anyway, my tzarech lebisilo. What does the silo mean when he says tzarech? It means tzarech le'en la'takana. It means that he needs to shave, but he can't. He has no way of doing it because there's no hair to be shaved, which is the opposite of what we said before. Before we said that before we said that in the first version, we said that according to Beis Shammai, according to Beis Shammai, he's stuck, there's nothing he can do. Now we're saying that Hillel are the ones who are saying that he's stuck. He needs to shave, but there's no shaving to be done. Well, Pligger did a Pados, and then according to this, it would mean that we're according to the second version, we're disagreeing with what Rav Pados said, because Rav Pados had said before that Beis Shammai and Rav Eliezer are saying the same thing. Beis Shammai in connection with the Nazir's hair, and Rav Eliezer in connection with the Metzora's thumb and toe. According to the second version, it comes out the other way around. It comes out that Beis Hillel are the ones who are machmer on him and saying that since he doesn't have any hair, he's stuck. Whereas Beis Shammai would be saying, "Ain't it Tzarech? He doesn't even need to do anything." Whereas Rav Eliezer would be the one who's saying that the Metzora is stuck. So that's the thing. It depends on the girsa Oma or Ve'oma Rav Avinah, whether we say that Rav Avinah is answering that there is a difference, that you can draw a distinction between tnufa and hair, that when it comes to tnufa, yes, the braisa would mean that the answer, if we say that Rav Avinah is answering Oma Rav Avinah, the girsa that we have, it would mean that we started off by saying, how could tnufa be ma'akiv? And the answer is, just like in the case of the hair, we say the Hillel says the shaving is ma'akiv. If he doesn't have hair, then he's stuck. The same thing the Brai said about the no hands means he's stuck, he can't do the tnufa. That would be what Rav is saying according to. Whereas according to the version of Amar Rav Avinah, it would be the question is still left open, basically.
That can go both ways.
So, yeah, it depends on the gear of the Omar or Omar. Gemaisa, like we said, the Rambam paskins as far as the no hands that's not ma'akiv, but as far as the hair, that according to the girsa that we have in the Rambam, he doesn't need to do anything. The Rambam says that it means he should pass a razor over his hair, and as far as the metzora, they stuck. Mishnah says, Gila chalav zevach, what if the nazir shaved his hair on one of the korbanos? Zevach, meaning, in other words, so we said literally. I mean, when we say al hazevach, means in connection with one of the korbanos.
Right. So what does it mean?
Well, what it means like this. We said before that the nazir brings three korbanos. We discussed yesterday the order of those korbanos according to Rabbi Lazo in the Mishnah, and this is the way that I'm paskin. The order is supposed to be chatas, ola, and shlomim, and then you shave when the shlomim is being brought, after the blood of it has been sprinkled on the zevach. Now, what if the Mishnah is saying, what if, for example, he brought only one of his korbanos. He brought, let's say, the chatos first. Or actually, the chatos is not a good example. He brought, let's say, the oilo, the shlomim first, and then he shaved his hair as the blood of that korban is being dealt with, and then it became possible. Dilach al-zevach, he shaved in connection with one of the korbanos as it's being offered. V'nim to possible, and the korban turned out to be possible. For example, the blood spilled, or for example, they shechted it not in his name, when the kohen who shechts the korban and does the various avodas, which they have to have in mind that it's for the sake of this person who it's being brought for. Tiglach de psula, then his haircut is possible. Usvachav le'ololoi, and his korbanos don't count for him. Which basically means, actually, if we're saying Tiglach Tipsula, actually means now he's considered like that case of the guy who was shaved by the robbers. Now he has to wait another 30 days or 7 days, one or the other, for his hair to grow back before he can try again. Another case, Gilach al-Chatas Shalai Lishma. What if he shaved in connection with the Chatas, and then it turned out the Chatas was offered Shalai Lishma? Now, the difference is, we've talked about this before, with most kinds of korbanos, if the Kayan shechts or sprinkles the blood or whatever of an Ola, for example, having in mind that it's a shlomim or some other kind of carbon, the carbon is kosher. The blood can be sprinkled on the Mizbeach, the fats can be burnt on the Mizbeach, etc.
So
but it doesn't count.
It was meant to be for, doesn't it?
Right, it doesn't count for the person who was supposed to bring an Ola, for example, it doesn't count for him as an Ola. He's going to have to bring another animal as an Ola. As opposed,
what does it count for? I mean,
it counts just as a voluntary carbon, basically.
Yeah.
It counts as a voluntary carbon. No, it counts as a voluntary carbon for the person who brought it, but only as a voluntary carbon, not as not the carbon he was required to. Yeah. So he had, for example, he'd said, "Hare olai ola, I obligate myself to bring an ola." And now he designated a particular animal to bring as the oila, so he has an obligation on himself now to bring an oila. If the kohen ends up shechting it, thinking that it's a shlomim, fine. It's still, you continue doing it as an ola, and it counts. Reuben has now had the mitzvah of bringing an ola, but he hasn't accomplished his nether. He's going to have to bring another animal for his nether.
And he has to pay for it, or the kohen?
That's the Gemara in Gittin discusses the question when the kohen does and doesn't have to pay for it. Part of it depends whether it's b'shoygi, b'mezid, whatever. There's different things. Sure, then I think the Gemara says maybe he doesn't have to, but I don't remember.
The Kohen.
I don't remember though exactly. It's when we get to we'll get to in Gittin in a few months. That's the shame. Yeah. Anyway, a chatos, and also the Korban Pesach are an exception to that. If a chatos is offered, if any of the four avodas, the shchita, the receiving of the blood in the basin, the walking it over to the mizbeach, and the sprinkling the blood on the mizbeach, if any of those four avodas are done shaloi l'shmam, not for the sake of a chatos, then the korban is completely possible. Can't burn the fat on the mizbeach, can't eat it, can't nothing. It just has to be taken out of the mizbeach and burned.
All the other korbanos are yotzei.
It's kosher. The korban is kosher. Elo shalai olu l'bayla v'shem chayu, but they don't count for the owner's obligation. A chatos or a korban pesach would be completely possible.
So you have to bring another one.
So you have to bring another one, obviously. But the difference is, in the case of an ola, for example, the pieces of it can still be offered on the mizbeach. In the case of shlomim, the kohenim still get their portions, and the owner still gets his portion. In the case of a chatos, nothing happens. You have to take the whole thing out of the beis mikdash and burn it. So therefore, gilach al chatos shalai l'shma. So therefore, if the nazir shaved his hair in connection with the chatos, so again, only the chatos was brought so far, and he shaved his hair as that's being offered, but the chatos was brought, but the chatos was offered shalai l'shma, one or more of the four avodas was done not with the proper intention, v'achakach hevi kavanos of l'shma, and then he brought the rest of the kavanos l'shma, but too late, he already shaved. Tiglach de psula, nevertheless, his tiglachas is possible, tzvachav le'olole, and his kavanos don't count for him, for his chiyuv, and he's going to have to wait, he's going to have to regrow his hair and then try again.
And bring another chatos.
Yeah. On the other hand,
how could it not be Nishma? What case?
That's the case, for example. The Kohen shefted the Chatos thinking that it's an Ola, for example.
The Kohen doesn't have to pay for that.
That's, again, the Gemara and Gittin has discussed all the pros and cons of it. So, wait a couple of months, and then we'll find out all about it. Yeah. The thing is, I'll tell you briefly. The Gemara discusses this is an example of something called nezek shein and nikir. If you looked at the pieces of meat of this korban, you couldn't see any difference in them. There's no detectable difference. It's a difference in halacha. It's a ruchnistic difference. La halacha, there's a machloka in the Gemara. That's the thing. So the Gemara discusses over there nezek shein and nikir. Is it considered a nezek in halacha or not? The Gemara says over there really it's not. However, in the case where the Kohen, because not Nicker. However, in the case where the Kohen did it, amazing, we make him pay in order that you don't have Kohen going and passing people's korbanos.
How do we know it's amazing?
If he said that he was going to do it, or whatever. Okay, well, you know, whatever. We figure it out. But again, let's wait till we get to the Gemara over there. Marcus Lehman, by the way, tells a cute story about this in his book about Rabbi Yochanan of Rothheim, one of the great Shtetlanim of 500 years ago. That's
where I come from.
Really, your descent. You come from Rothheim? Yeah. Okay. Anyway, he tells us that in his times there was a Meshumad, originally named Yosef, afterwards took the name Johann Pfefferkorn, who went and massered to the German and church authorities or whatever that the Talmud is a dangerous book and it needs to be burnt, etc. You know, the usual kind of thing that Meshumadim have ever done over the centuries. Sort of Yosemite goes to one of the German princes over there, one of the electors over there, and he talks to him. You know, it's not fair. You know, you got such an amaolat like Pfefferkorn. You're trusting his judgment. He barely knows the block. He barely knows how to read a block Gemara. So the elector says, okay, very nice. I don't know how to read a block Gemara either. If he comes to me, and how am I supposed to show him that he knows nothing? So Rabbi Yochanan says, that's fine. I'll teach you a little piece of Gemara, a little svaradika piece. You can quiz him on it and see how he fares. So he teaches him this concept of nezek shein and nikir. And he gives him an example, for example, that a parah adruma. Let's say you have a person has a parah adruma, and somebody else goes and does work with this parah adruma. Afterwards, again, there's no detectable difference in the animal, but it's possible. That's an example of nezek shein and nikir. So nezek shein and nikir, lo shmei nezek. Lo shmei nezek. It's not considered a nezek in halacha. So what happens? This pfefferkorn comes to the elector, and the elector says, Nuri, you claim that you're this great expert on the Jewish Talmud. Let me quiz you on it. What's the din in nezek shein and nikir? Pfefferkorn is searching in his brain. Finally, he remembers from like 30 years ago, we learned in Cheder. Wait a minute. Oh, nezek shein and nikir, lo shmei nezek. Yeah. See, the Jews are all like that. You can damage something, and as long as the damage is not detectable, they won't make you pay for it. Yeah, a bunch of cheaters, all them. And the elector starts yelling at him, you're Amaoret, you have no idea what you're talking about. Nezek Shein and Nikar means a spiritual kind of damage, like the case of a part of Aduma. Akitzer, that went a long way towards canceling the Zeta. Anyway, now still in the name, the Mishnah. On the other hand, now, what happens if he shaved his hair in connection with the Ola, or the Shlomim, and they were offered Shlo L'Shmon? And then afterwards he brought the rest of his Kavanos L'Shmon. Still, Tiglach Tetzula is Vachad La'Ola. Same idea, that Tiglachas is possible, because he did it on a possible of carbon, and the rest of the Kavanos don't count. He has to regrow his hair and start over.
On the Shlomim
or on the Ola. On the other hand, here, Rav Shimon disagrees. Rav Shimon says, no, Oisei HaZevach L'Ololoi, that particular korban taka, whichever it was that was brought Shaloi L'Shma, doesn't count for him. Aval Shar Zvachim Olo, but the other ones do count. Because, again, in the case of an Olo or a Shlomim, an Olo brought with the wrong intention is still an Olo, a Shlomim brought with the wrong intention is still a Shlomim, only a Chatos is possible.
So, yeah,
no, everybody agrees to that concept.
Yeah,
everybody agrees to that concept. What Rav Shimon is saying, and the Gemara explains that Rav Shimon's point is, suppose B'chlal, the Gemara is going to talk about, suppose a Nazir will shave in connection not with his own Shlomim at all. Suppose just somebody, not somebody else maybe, suppose he's just bringing a Shlomim of his own, a voluntary Shlomim, and decides that he's going to do his haircut in connection with that. That would be good enough for the Yemen. So the same thing over here. What happens to his Shlomim when it was brought, when the Kohen thought it was an Ola or what have you? It's still a kosher Shlomim, which doesn't count for his Chova. Fine, Rav Shimon says that's good enough. The rest, that particular korban, fine, he's going to have to make up the shlomim later, but the chatos is still a chatos, the oila is still an oila, and his shaving is still a shaving, because it was accomplished on a shlomim. Same thing with an oila. A chatos is different, because a chatos brought shaloi l'shmonim, not a chatos. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, v'im gilach al shlosha, and if he shaved his hair in connection with all three of them, so all three of them were brought, and then he shaved his hair, Nimsa Echaman Kosher, and at least one of them turns out to be kosher. Tiglach is Sheder, then his Tiglach is kosher. And then later on he'll make up the other two. That's the point. The point is basically that his Tiglach has to be in connection with a kosher korban. That's what we say. If the Chatos was possible, then that's it. The Chatos is possible, and there's nothing you can do. Finished. According to the Tanakhama, the same thing with the Olo or the Shlomim. If he shaved in connection with one of them, and the other ones were brought only afterwards. Here we're talking the other way around. They brought the chatos, they brought the oila, they brought the shlomim. He shaved his hair in connection with the shlomim. Later on, it turned out that the chatos was not a chatos and the oila was not an oila, let's say, but the shlomim was a shlomim. Or not even, let's say, the shlomim wasn't a shlomim, but the oila was an oila. Whatever. One of the three of them was good, and he shaved his hair after it was brought. Good. Then everything's good, and he'll make up the missing ones later. Well, not if the chatos is a good one. If the chatos is a good one. If the chatos wasn't a good one, then I'll bring another chatos another time. But that's okay, because he shaved his hair after the oila was brought, which the oila was a good one, or after the shlomim was brought, and the shlomim was a good one, let's say. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Abba Abba, Zoyse Meres, based on this Mishnah, we can infer, Kasavar Rav Shimon, Nazir Shigilach al Shamin Nedava Yatza, that Rav Shimon holds that if a Nazir shaved his hair in connection with the Shamin Nedava, a voluntary shlomim, then he's Yotze. Nothing to do with Naziris, in other words. So that's effectively what he's saying in the Mishnah, is that if the Kohen had offered his Shlomim, or his Ola, not as the Nazir's Shlomim, but rather as an Ola, or what have you, then we say, his Tiglach, Rav Shimon is saying, his Tiglach is still okay. My timer, what's the reason? The Pasuk says, V'noftan ala esha shetach zevach ha-shlomim. The Pasuk says that he takes his hair after he shaves it and puts it in the fire under the zevach ha-shlomim, the shlomim, v'lekosav al-shlom lov. It doesn't say on his shlomim, implying it doesn't have to be his shlomim, as long as it's a shlomim, and that's good enough.
Okay.
However, once we see it by the shlomim, then the same thing. We said before by a nazir that he's supposed to put the hair under the pot with the shlomim, but if he puts it under the pot with one of the other karbanos, then he's yotze b'dieved. So we learn sort of from the shlomim to the other one. So over here, a chatos, okay, a chatos psula is not a chatos at all, so that can't count. But an oila, that's shloim l'shma, is still an oila, so therefore it can still count.
It's not for the bar.
Well, that's the thing. He still has to be masked to make it up later, but he doesn't have to regrow his hair and start all over again. However, the halacha is not like Reb Shimon, though. The halacha is like the Chachamim, that regardless, only if one of the korbanos was actually kosher from start to finish and he shaved after it, then he's good. Otherwise he has to start all over.
None of them.
If none of them were good, let me rephrase that. If none of the ones that were brought before he shaved his hair were good, so that's the thing. If he shaved his hair while the first korban is being brought, and that one turns out possible, then he's in a bad way. If he shaved his hair while the second korban is being brought, and either the first or the second, then if the first one was okay, then he's good. And the same thing, then the same thing.
After it's brought.
After all three of them are brought, then it's fine. As long as one of the three was okay, then he's good.